And welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. This week, I'm joined in the studio by two special guests, Jonila Godole, a journalist and scholar, and Hanna Cena, an artist from Kosovo who's living in Albania. And we're going to be discussing the path of Albanian women's rights from communism to democracy and beyond. Earlier this year, a documentary called Women in Dictatorship, Beyond the Myth of Emancipation by journalist Fatmira Nikoli was screened, highlighting how Albania's repressive communist regime falsely claimed it gave women freedom by allowing them education and employment. Now, this is something I've often heard both from supporters and opposers of communism, and that is that women during the rule of Enver Hoxha had equal rights and freedoms in many ways more than now. Now, people talk about women being employed, state childcare, quality, but I'm not really convinced on this, and I wanted to find out a bit more about the reality. And I'm joined in the studio today by Jonila Godole, who's an author, scholar, journalist, translator, and an expert on memory studies. You're also the executive director of the Institute for Democracy, Media and Culture. I'm also joined by Hanna Cena, who's an artist and an activist with the Habit Collective. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
So we're going to start by talking about this myth of women's emancipation during communism, and then we're going to move on to the modern day and the situation as it stands now. Jonila, can we talk a bit about where this idea of women being emancipated during communism has come from? Is it a myth? Was it a reality?
Oh, there are a lot of myths about the dictatorship. One of them is the emancipation of women. Other is that the education was better in that time, or the food was better, and there were no criminality in comparison to today, and a lot of other myths. We had a scientific conference, international conference, 2 years ago on myths of communism who are still alive until now. And one of the myths was the emancipation of women. And after that, the documentary of, we just produced a documentary with Fatmira Nikoli. And that was interesting during the documentary too, as we were working for the documentary, just to see what is that, this kind of myth of emancipation. We had a lot of interviews and archive documents, these archive documents and film documents from the archive of film just showed just the opposite. Mm-hmm. But of course, it was a lot of propaganda. So it is a myth, as in the modern times and in the modern democratic country, there were always movements where the women just fought for their rights. And in Albania, after the Liberation War, there were this kind of emancipation, which was like a gift given to the women. So it was not fought for that. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it was an emancipation, but we have to admit that it is very complex. It is a complex theme. After the Liberation War, the literacy of the people was, of course, massive, and it was done a lot for the education, so that the people are more literate after that. And it is a fact too that it was a massive employment of women after 1945, but that was the emancipation was like I see it was a side effect of a lot of policies during that time under the communist regime. So the women were like a workforce; they mm-hmm. were treated like a workforce more than that or modern woman like we have today that can choose the job, the profession, and the work. So it was mandatory. You had to work. And for the communist regime, it was important to have every workforce men and women just to work for the to they said in the time, or the propaganda of the time was for the industrialization of the country, so everybody was needed. But that is for me, of course, it is a kind of emancipation when we compare from what time the women came and what kind of culture, very traditional culture that we have here. But that was not so easy. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of women who couldn't study, a lot of women who were just in the internment camps. And in the archive materials, of course, we didn't find any evidence about that. So everything was beautifully, the facade of all the women.
Happy women
just
sitting,
happy women with a tractor in the agriculture. Happy women just in the congresses of the party with the leader, and always happy faces of these men, women. So for me, it was the masculinization during the 45 years of dictatorship of the women. So in all the professions and jobs that they just had to do in that time, mm-hmm. they it was mandatory, the work, just working in three at day, at night. And then after that, it was a burden because the women in this traditional culture, which did not change after the liberation war, so they had to work, but they had to do all the work at home and the child care. So it was a double burden
job. Mm-hmm.
And double job for the women. So this is what I see, but what we never talk about, it is what about the women, which who were really educated in the 30s, educated in Italy or in other countries, or even in Albania, and the most of them, since the first years after the liberation war, they got executed or put in prison,
yes,
or internment. We know some of them, Sabiha Kasimati, Musine Kokalari, Zurika Mano, who was executed, but we have more than 7,000 women among 35,000 of political prisoners. There were women, 7,000, and more than 300 women. Their bones, their body was never found until now. They were executed or died in prison. Nobody was talking about that. Mm-hmm. So when I hear today, so it was 45 years of emancipation and the women have the rights, and I say, no, my mother, it is very personal now, the personal story, but my mother, she couldn't study. She was coming from a family mm-hmm. with biography education, with a bad biography, from a rich family and from a kulak family, and so she was not allowed to go to university and to study, and maybe the same fate I would have had it mm-hmm. if the regime was not collapsing.
It was nothing
in
to
1990.
Do with, so. It was nothing to do with what women wanted. It was nothing to do with them standing and saying, you know, this is what we want to go to work. We want to go. It was forced upon them, and only if they were considered worthy enough to receive it. If not, they were sent,
yes,
to internment camps or executed.
Yes, you had to be loyal mm. to the party, loyal to the ideology, the communist ideology. And if you were born, or if you were by coincidence part of the enemy family, then you saw what,
yes,
was the emancipation of the women. I'm not talking only about the violence that we had, or lot of women who came out of the prisons, and after the 90s they told about the violation and rapes in the prisons, and or even during interrogations.
Mm-hmm.
But we are talking about this propaganda of emancipation of women, which was really, in the communist ideology, very important to talk about the equality of men and women. But that was a propaganda, because
mm-hmm.
that was not true. So this is, for me, one of the biggest myths that we have from the dictatorship, and that the women in that time they were sometimes they were a facade. So we had a few women which really had a career, even in the highest position in the politics in that time. But they were mostly the women of the men, of the important
yes.
and high, these powerful men. So the other, it is really very rare that you have women coming from other families to have this important task. Sometimes you have a woman like Lenka Truko, for example. She was she didn't have a degree, a gymnasium degree, a high school degree, but she got a degree in the school of politics, in the party school, and then was a minister and important. So coming from the agriculture, without any diploma and degree, just being a minister in that time, just to show that loyalty get paid. So if you are loyal, you just can have a career even in the politics.
So even that but was propaganda.
Even that was propaganda. And it is this kind of tokens, we can say, for women, which is still today. So you have this facade, the women, which are mostly the facade of this very Stalinistic dictatorship and regime that we have in Albania. So you don't really have the women which were critical, or you have some of them, which, for example, Edi Luarasi, which about her we were talking in the documentary, and she was an artist, and then she was critical, or the regime just thought she was critical, then they banned her. She couldn't do her art anymore, and one of the best actors that we had in Albania in that time. But most of the others, they were just playing the game. Mm-hmm. So to be on the secure side in that time. So
it was a facade. So now, obviously, property rights. I think during communism, there wasn't really such a thing for women to have property rights, because everything was owned by the state, essentially. So
it was not only for women, it was for
men
the society
as well.
So
what about things like divorce, abortion? Were these permitted? Were women able to make choices like that for themselves?
No, in former communist countries, so in Eastern Europe, in Albania, like in Romania and other countries, the state had the full control over your body as a woman. So,
still happens today in some countries in Europe.
Yeah, still. Not in Albania so much anymore. It is not that it was not abortion in that time, but it was illegal.
Yes.
A lot of women died during this very bad conditions in which the abortion was done in that time, and the state was just controlling the the birth, and was not allowed. So you didn't have any control of your body, what you do, and if you were labeled as an enemy, then you were stigmatized as without moral too. So for a lot of women, so it was not only you have not moral in politics, so you are the enemy, but even you just have no moral as a human, as a woman. It was mostly for the women. So that were a lot of stigma in the time, and it was, how can you talk about emancipation in the time?
Yes.
It is crazy. Yeah.
Now, we had the transition to democracy. Albania has been a democracy for 30-something years. How have things progressed since then? Because the moment communism ended, there's absolutely no way that this stigma, this mentality, this sort of system just came to a dead end. It must have taken time to change, to evolve. How are things now? Have we made progress? Have we made progress quick enough? What's your view on this, knowing what you do about communism?
Yeah, of course we have made progress. Albania, it's a fragile democracy until now, and the society, it is not really open. We do not have a very open society, even if we play like that. And it is. I see a lot of changes. Of course, this has nothing to do with the politics here. It has to do with the zeitgeist, with the spirit of time, and the development. of women and a lot of movements which were done in the European countries, in the Western world. And so this has an impact in Albania too. Of course, the civil society, a lot of NGOs working in with the issues of gender equality of the women, they have done a lot of work, of course, and very positive work in 30 years. But I think that we still have a very traditional society and that it is difficult for women. I'm not talking about Tirana. It is difficult, it is different in the capital, so you can raise your child alone and to have and have a job. This is a burden, of course, but you can do it without being so much stigmatized. But we are not talking here about the smaller cities or the other the villages or areas where this is impossible still now. So the immigration of course changed a lot, the free market, so that you can have now a job, a career, the work that you decide by yourself. But even this, I think it is much more difficult in Albania as when you go in other countries. But of course, even in Western countries, women are just dealing, like always, with not the same salaries and not for the same positions. And so the problems are always there for women. Maybe we just learn to live with these problems and to have that. I remember as I was a very young journalist, since I was 18 in the beginning of the 90s, we were only three women, young women, in the newspaper in that time, in Kohajon. And that was really difficult just to do your job or just to decide if you are gonna work for politics. I was a journalist for politics and everybody was expecting a man doing that job. And I never saw myself, I never identified myself with the gender in the work, but with you have to be a professionist. So
yes,
you have to be professional. It has nothing to do if you are a man or woman. But that was not very accepted in that time. So yeah, but that was another time, I thought. And of course, you had in 30 years the sexual harassment, which was never issued and never was spoken openly in this country. This is a taboo. It is a taboo topic until today. And as I said before, we just learned maybe to handle all these difficulties and just to do our work. And but of course, it is not the same. So I am positive about the future, that we have a young generation. I see it with my students, with my daughter, and they have another mentality. And I see it with the male students and with the younger generation of men, which really have learned from some of the mistakes maybe of their parents, of their fathers and grandfathers. And let's hope for the future to be better. But what it lacks for me here, it is that we have a lot of women in high positions, maybe in the businesses, in the private market. And we have that, even we have women in politics. But I do see a path of dependency from the past, so that they are just used for the facade more than they are just to be to stay there for a different kind of politics. So I haven't seen until now women that they you talk really openly and fight against corruption from their colleagues, the male colleagues. I just see them as to be loyal to the leaders so that they become the positions that they have. So it is really pity that I do not see any bigger differences. And every woman who is a strong woman and has the own opinion about things, which sometimes is not the same what the leader or the director or the boss of a company is saying, always it is a problem. And they do not have the chance to get to get promoted in the career. So this is something which we have to work still.
And Hannah, just to ask you about this, we're going to talk about your art later, but what's your view in the last 30 years? Have things progressed quickly enough? Are we where we should be in terms of women's rights? And also the point about politics as well. I think I agree with you that a lot of it is a facade, but I think it's also a first step. You know, you normalize women in politics, seeing them there, and then that encourages a new generation to maybe come forward, you know, even though it's not ideal. So I want to ask you about those two points.
There are very small steps in changing as women, but for me, for example, as a theater director and as a artist, it's very difficult even to be invited in projects, because mostly they invite male directors, or if they invite me, they give me some like very soft themes, you know, since you're a woman, so you are
the cliches,
soft. Yes, yes, exactly, cliches that you have to deal as a woman, But, and I'm from Kosovo, so comparing, for example, when my family, they didn't have a very high education, part of my mom. But if I see, for example, parents of my boyfriend, they are completely different from my parents. They were highly educated. They are very different from Kosovo parents. So I think maybe communism did change something in this this situation, because in Kosovo we were like suppressed from the Serbians, and we didn't have any chance to get to school, and women were the only housekeepers, so they didn't have a chance to go to school. But in the end of the day, we are in the same position. Mm-hmm. But I think it changed a bit.
But not fast enough.
As Anila is saying, even the politicians, they are not vocal.
In fact, talking about education, I saw a statistic last week that as of 2022, 10% of Albanian girls under the age of 16 do not go to school. So the statistic was 90.04% of girls go to school, while 97% of boys do. Why is this happening in 2022? And this number's getting worse. So the number of girls not going to school is getting worse over the years rather than improving. So what's going wrong here? Why are our girls dropping out of school more than they were a couple of years ago?
I think this is terrible. I don't know what to say, but I guess maybe it's in very remote places, or because, and now it's a very huge poverty in Albania and in Kosovo also, people are leaving the country, and I guess the girls stay at home to help their moms. This is my only... Mm-hmm.
I do not know these statistics. This is really...
Horrible.
I'm speechless hearing that. What we had until now, it was just the opposite that we had in the university. I teach since 18 years now, and we always had women more than
and this is this
male
was weird because so. Yeah, this is true as well. So when you then go to university, out of those that go to university, more
women
go
thrive all
to
the time.
University.
Yeah. So they mostly young women. What I saw in Albania, they have the highest culture capital. They do not have so much the network, which the men are better, but they have this culture capital. So capital, I mean, they know the foreign languages, and mm-hmm. they have master. They just want to have a PhD, and so they are really eager to study in Albania. So I don't really.
Yeah, they work harder than
these
men.
These figures, yes. This is incredible. Yes. If this is a tendency now, but maybe it has to do with the market. So what are they gonna do after their after the school? Yeah. A lot of them they see now you can be an influencer and earn a lot of money.
Yes,
you do not need any diploma or PhD or in
although
the university.
Although you can get them now.
Yes, and so this is, I don't know,
yes.
We need more data to analyze that.
I visited a very small Albanian village, and I'm not going to name it because it's probably just one or two families that lived there, but and this was a few years ago, and I was invited into this family's house, and the women were in one room, the men were in the other. And I asked about the young girls that were there. I said, oh, you know, you go to school? No, when they're 13, they stop. And why do they need to? They need to learn the home when they're going to get married. I mean, this was a very remote sort of village, you know, and I'm wondering whether that is something that's still prevailing as well, especially in these more rural areas, you know. Why do they need to go to school? They're going to get married, they're going to have children, they need to learn how to take care of the home. But this really shocked me, you know, hearing this.
It is shocking. I would prefer a mature woman who just decides to stay at home with kids. Yeah. This is very good too, the motherhood and to be a mother.
They should have the choice.
Which I really respect, but this is another choice that you do it to educate the younger generation. And so it is,
But it happens. For example, when I started, when I was younger, so in Kosovo it's a tradition to drink Turkish tea. So in all the time, only young girls, they serve Turkish tea. And at the moment when I decided to say, no, I'm not serving Turkish tea, I felt like I'm
a rebel.
Yeah, I was liberated. And from then, I decided what to do. So it's a very stupid thing to do, but you feel very empowered when you say no to your brothers. I'm not serving tea anymore. You do it yourself, by yourself. But this has to come from your own character, from your own. You have to fight, you know. Being a woman is like, you have to fight every day. Since you are born, you with your family, with the school, with the system, so it's like a very difficult job.
Which brings me on to women's role. So Albanian women spend an average of 25 years of their life, their total life, raising children and carrying out domestic work. They call it unpaid work. Domestic work such as caring for family members, etc., housework. This was data from the World Bank as well. Also, the average Albanian woman spends 5.5 hours of her day carrying out unpaid work, unpaid care work and housework, compared to just 43 minutes for men, or I think that for men that might be slightly ambitious in some people's cases, but this is a huge discrepancy. And okay, I don't expect to be paid for taking care of my daughter, for cleaning the house, etc., but when you look at this discrepancy between the two sexes, this is really quite something. And then we look at the statistics as well. 52% of women are in work, 66% of men are in work as well. So we have women who are at work. There's not a huge difference there. They are at work, but then they are also doing this whole other second job when they are at home as well. What are these men doing with the rest of their day? And why is this discrepancy so big in Albania? Hannah.
Maybe men are watching football, I don't know. But the thing is that women, they do all the work. So now for example, my mom, she used to do everything at home. She used to go to work, she took care of us. And my father, he just went to his job and he came back. And I think it's like a more traditional way of living. You know, women have to do everything, and men is the big authority over there and just telling what to do and how to do it. But I don't know if it's still true nowadays, because
could these, like,
I don't believe it. It's too much.
It's they're crazy figures. Is this maybe having an impact on women, for example, joining politics, wanting to become politicians or local councillors or pursue these kinds of careers which are not 9-to-5? You know, you mentioned this before. There's not so many women in these big roles. Is this possibly something affecting it?
I don't think that this is a phenomenon only for Albania. So if we see the statistic in other Western countries, so always are the same problems, that the women do have this this double burden, so they just have to work and then to do the to have everything under control in the family and then with the childcare. So this is something which maybe I belong to the women which just said, just give your personal example, just work. And how I understand the feminist way is just to work and to do what I think it is important, and to be free in my what I decide, and to live with what I earn, and not to be dependent on others, on male, on husband or things. And this is the kind how I understand, and living my example and just telling that this is a way you can do it too. So it is not to lament now and to play the victim. It is like it is. It is like that. And I do not see that it is gonna change in the near future, not only in Albania. Albania, of course, not at all, but even in the Western countries.
But it's the same.
And we have to educate better males. Mm. So the man,
yeah.
And if it somebody has a responsibility about that, this is the woman. This is a mother. It begins with a mother having two children or more, so a young boy and a young girl, and just it is really the responsibility of mothers today just to educate mm-hmm. in the proper way their young children,
mothers
male,
and fathers.
Male or girls. Mm. Everybody has to have responsibility in life for the things that they do, and it is, of course, you have a gender, you are a woman or a man, of course, there are differences, and you can, but you have to be able to do everything alone as a man, and I always say the responsibility is to the mothers. The mothers are the one who educate, and then it is a society, of course, mm-hmm. it is not only the family. Then you just bring the young boy in the school and the teacher and the environment. They just have to support this, that everybody, they are, I do not say that they are equal. We cannot be equal, a man and a woman, in the physical force or other things. But I give a lot of responsibility to the family and to the mothers, how they educate the mm-hmm. young boys, so because then we are talking about the consequences which this bad education had. Then we cannot change it. You can do laws, of course, but this does not change so much. It changes when it is in the family, when it is supported from the society,
mm-hmm.
that you have to respect both of the genders, and you have to respect the woman, and to let them decide free what they do. And it is not only in life marriage the most important thing, but if there are girls who think that this is the most important thing, of course, yeah, let them free decide that. Yeah. I am for a very free, for a free society, for an open society, but where the young girls and the women are free to decide by themselves.
Mm.
And I think it will need lot more time, but immigration, I think a lot of people who are going, and even the younger people who are going, and I am sure one day, if the situation in Albania, if we have less corruption in Albania, and the politics is doing better the job, what they have, a lot of these young people which are studying there and living there will come back and will bring this this mentality of just be careful when mm-hmm. you talk with the girl next yeah. to you, and so this is something which I hope that I will experience in this life, and I'm sure it will come, but it needs more time and support here from the school, the family, from the media, of course.
The media is
I'm teaching in the department of journalism, so I have the young journalists there, and I see sometimes how difficult how difficult it is for them just to use the right terminology, and how to cover these histories and events like the like one now.
Yes. Not use so. So how many media do not use the word rape? It's not sex with force.
Yes. Yeah.
It's rape.
Nobody says
yes.
rape.
It's like
try to soften it.
Yeah, it's
yes,
not.
Because it is always the mentality here. It was before. Maybe now it is better, but still it is in the remote areas or something that maybe the girl has done something.
Yeah,
maybe the woman
that.
Has done something to provoke
yes.
the feeling of the man. With not the right dress or not the right, I don't know, expression
yeah,
in the face. So this
happens,
is something which
this happens with
which
femicides
has to change
as
yes.
well. The media will always, after they will always report the motives are unclear
yes.
or he did it because he was jealous. No, he did it because he's a murderer.
Yes.
That's there's no.
Yes.
There's reason.
No reason.
She it's not
they
she
can,
did something
yeah.
wrong and then she
exactly.
he decided to kill her. No, he killed her. That's
yeah.
it. There's no.
This
it
is why
go any
I said
that.
That the role of media is very, very
important.
Important.
Mm. Because this is how it changes people's mentality, you know, how you see
yes,
the
you
language
see it,
used.
You read it and, mm-hmm.
Yes, because most of the Albanians, they are in social networks or
yes.
in the television, in the front of television in Albania. And it depends what you see, what you watch, it is what you are.
Yes.
Not only what you eat, but even what you watch, what you eat, like information
yes.
and role models that mm-hmm. you have every day in your life. And but it is much more deeper. We cannot
yes.
go today in that. But
I want to, you mentioned social media, television. I want to go to Hannah now. You are part of this collective. You use art as your medium to try and enforce, enact, inspire change in terms of women's rights. Can you tell me a bit about the collective you have, how it started, and how you're using art to convey your messages?
Okay, I'm part of a collective. We are two pair of sisters. So we started this collective 10 years ago in Pristina. And we did it because, like, in Kosovo, there were a lot of women who were killed by their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So, and nobody was doing anything about it. And, you know, we did this kind of demonstrations, very cliche demonstrations, like with the name of the victim, and, you know, we want justice. So we wanted to, and all of us, we studied in Faculty of Arts, so we decided to go in the street. So it was the first time that four women go in the street and they use their body to demonstrate or to say something. And in the beginning, we didn't know what we were doing because we were really young, so we were just saying, we just said, we're going to do this performance and we see how people react to it. And we saw that people were shocked, not because we did something big, but because they saw four women in the middle of the street saying something. And then we start, and this was because there was this young student who was shot by her husband, and nobody, even the husband, he left the country, they never arrested him, and the family of the husband took the child from the family of the woman, you know, and it was terrible and very sad, and nobody did anything about it. And so we gathered together and we did this performance against murders in Kosovo. And slowly we started to do more performances and, you know, get bigger and older also. But the thing is that we are doing this kind of art and we try to talk about domestic violence, about feminism and about, you know, all this kind of subjects. But the thing is that you see that you actually don't change anything, you know. Because I see if when I go on social media and I see the comments of people under our performances, the things that they say to you is, you know, it's very, they are so angry, they are, you know, you're not doing anything big, you're just
they're
existing there. And yes, and you know, and you're like, this, our performances are like a thermometer, you know, you just see how they react and how they hate women, just their existence. And for example, we did a performance for LGBT rights 5 years ago, and it was like a postcard. We kissed each other and we received like 300 death threats from people from Kosovo and Albania. So they wanted our names and they wanted to kill us because of a picture. And we went to the police station, even the policemen, they were joking with us. You know, they said, oh, girls, just delete the picture, that it's nothing. You know, they don't take your life seriously. And that's why all this violence and all the killings happen in Kosovo and Albania, because they don't arrest and they don't punish them as they should. So, and we're trying to mix this art, like a performance, and mostly we are focused on performances and to try to raise questions about our existence, about women, and about society that we live in.
Now, I was looking on your Facebook, there was one of the posts you'd done called Baby Blues and the Echoes of Grief, and I mean, I know what it's about, and it resonated with me as a mother, but can you explain a bit for
yes.
our viewers as well?
We did this performance 4 years ago, and it talks about mothers who give birth. So one of the girls in the collective, she gave birth, and so we're talking about this baby blues that nobody knows about
mm-hmm.
it. So we didn't have any information, to be honest. So we just, we heard from our friends, and because nobody speaks about it, it's like a very taboo thing to know. Most of the people say, oh, she just gave birth, that's why she's like that, like all the hormones and everything. So it talks about this depression after giving birth, and it talks about our mothers, how they handled it. Because at the time that we were born, nobody cared about baby blues. And so also my mother passed away, so we tried to talk about birth and death in
mm-hmm.
this performance. And it's like, it's a very artistic performance. It will sound very stupid if I explain it now. but
it's not at all. Explain it.
So it's like we there are like with these four shopping carts that you push when you go to the supermarket to buy something, and we try to say that, for example, our mothers, you, me, all of us, we go and buy all the time things about for our family, for our partners, and for and you when you go home, there's nobody to say thank you, or you carry them, and you know you are always trying.
Who takes care of us?
Yeah, nobody. So
and this it's one of my biggest complaints.
And also we have these shopping carts and those glasses that also women in Kosovo, they serve all the time. So we are working for guests, for family, for husbands, and we try to make this noise with the shopping cart and the glass. They when they hit each other, they explode, mm-hmm. but they break. And so this is the sound of liberation in a way.
I didn't have postnatal depression, baby blues. I had prenatal depression, and it was very, very, very bad. Like, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I wasn't excited about my daughter. I mean, it completely incapacitated me. I remember going to the doctors in tears and saying, like, help me. Like, what's happening to me? Why do I feel like this? And the gynecologist and the doctor were laughing at me crying. And, if we had a lek for every woman who came in here feeling like this.
We'd be rich.
And they laughed to the point I wanted to storm out, but I was so pregnant, I couldn't storm anywhere. I was sort of like this, you know. it didn't have the desired effects. But, yeah, I was just laughed at out of the room.
Don't take it seriously.
And humiliated. Yeah. And, I mean, I was okay in the end, but women kill themselves.
Yes.
They kill their kids as well, and they suffer from this.
Yes, and the thing is that nobody, for example, explained that to us as young girls. You know, for example, my mom or the teacher or somebody just to talk about it, so we know what happens. Or we have another performance for this Plan B, for these pills that you take if you have mm-hmm. unprotected sex. And we never knew that pill exists. We heard about it very late when we were like 25 years old. So you go at the pharmacy and you buy the pill, and even when you buy it, the pharmacist judges you. You know, you feel very bad. You feel ashamed. And then we did a performance about that. So we try to talk about topics that they're not that people don't speak a lot about that.
And the last thing I want to bring up as well, maybe it might inspire you, is when I was pregnant, I had everybody telling me, I said, oh, you know, is it a boy or a girl? Oh, it's a girl. Oh, next time, you know, better luck next time, maybe it will be a boy. And I found this really, really offensive and upsetting. And then I'd looked into statistics as well that show that Albania has an unnatural boy-to-girl birth rate. So there's an unnaturally high level of boys born here compared to girls, which suggests that gender-selective abortion is a thing. Is this something that happens in Kosovo as well?
It
is it something on your radar as an artist?
It does. It does happen a lot. Even there are like families who have like five children, and they keep having children to have a boy, so because they want to have somebody, a man in their family. But this selective abortion is very frequent in Kosovo also, and it's a very it's a huge topic, and it's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Yunile, anything
no,
to add?
No, but this will go away. The more emancipated the society will be, the less we will have this kind of phenomenon. I do not appreciate it all. So fighting so much for having a son for the name of the family.
It has been
the sake of the name of the family. It is something which I think has changed a lot in the cities. Changed a lot in the last 30 years, of course. But it shows us that you can have a democracy, but this doesn't mean then the modernization that the society is very open and democratic. Mm-hmm. So it takes much more time.
Ladies, thank you very much
you.
For your time today. We could have spent much longer discussing these topics, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this week. You can tune in to Inside Albania every Saturday at 5 o'clock on Euronews Albania, on our YouTube channel, and across all major podcasting platforms. Miro Pavshim.